We'll go ahead and begin a work session today. I'm joined today by Senator Stedman and Senator Wilkie. My name is Senator Green. We have one other senator on the way. Senator Dyson is excused, and Senator Bundy and Senator Hoffman aren't here. The first bill we are going to discuss today is Senate Bill 60, extending the Suicide Prevention Council. After a short hearing on that, we will begin work on the supplemental. For all the people who are online, off net, or in an LIO interested in this bill, it is my intention to move this bill out today as soon as we have a quorum here. And if you want to testify at a time certain, I will set aside a bill and it will make wait until the next meeting. If you want the bill to pass out, you'll let us get on with the hearing on the bill after Shannon introduces the bill. And so if that's acceptable to everyone, you are welcome to introduce or to send to us written comments or your approval of this bill or your support of this bill. One of the things I do want to notice right off, and we'll remember this in our when we make the motion to move it out of committee, is that we've revised the fiscal note to reflect the presence of the funding for the Suicide Prevention Council in the out years. And the previous fiscal note showed a zero all the way through, but we do have to reflect the expenditures for the future years. Shannon, go ahead and begin your presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for this opportunity to address you today. My name is Shannon Straube. I'm here on behalf of Senator Ben Stevens. Senate Bill 60 would extend the termination date of the Suicide Prevention Council to June 30, 2009. Thank you. A legislative audit was recently conducted regarding the council and its activities. The recommendation by the audit was that the legislature should extend the termination date to June of 2009. In 2001, legislation to enact the Suicide Prevention Council was introduced by then-Senate President Rick Halford. As a member of the Suicide Prevention Council, Senator Stevens has introduced this legislation for your consideration. In the previous committee, there was discussion about measurable performance indicators, missions and measures type effort on behalf of the council. The council has received this recommendation in your packet. There's a letter from the council chair that they plan to discuss this at their next quarterly meeting, which is next week. And I'm available here if you have any questions. Also online, I believe, is Catherine Kraft. She is staff to the council. She can answer any questions you may have in further detail about the council's at work.
Are there any questions for Shannon on the presentation of this legislation? Catherine Kraft, is there anything you'd like to add to Shannon's presentation?
So, Madam Chair, I'm just here for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Do the members present, do you have any further questions? I know we covered it pretty well in Senate Hess regarding the audit and the report from the audit committee. Are there any questions, Senator Wilkin or Senator Stedman, on the audit, or have they been covered carefully enough? And I want to be sure that I have the letter you referred to.
It should be in with the suicide prevention plan. I think I put it in there, right in the inside page.
Booklet?
Yeah. It's otherwise I can bring you a copy. I have an extra here.
Okay. I don't see it, but
I believe that's it. Yeah, that looks like it.
I thank you for mentioning it, because there was a good discussion on how are things being measured and what are the desires and the goals. And it's because it is a subject that everyone wants to support, but sometimes it also can seem like is anything happening, what's being done, are we in the right progression on this. Thank you, Senator Olson. We are now in a full session. We're covering the Senate Bill 66, the Suicide Prevention Council, and the extension of that date and the termination and the sunset. And we've had the presentation by the bill sponsors staff, and from Catherine Kraft of the Suicide Prevention Council has joined us with her comments. Pat Davidson, did you need to testify on anything?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Pat Davidson from Legislative Audit, and I was here to answer any questions committee members may have with regard to the findings or the recommendations included in the audit report.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think you'd agree with me. We had a pretty good discussion in Senate Hess on those issues, and we're pleased with the way your responses have been and everything's coming together on this.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes. Is there anyone else on the off-net? Is everyone? Okay, thank you. Thank you. What is the will of the committee?
Madam Chair, move to report Senate Bill 60 from Committee of Individual Recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is the attached Finance Committee fiscal note. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we will continue with Senate Bill 97 and Senate Bill 98, and that will be conducted by Senator Wilkin. Brief at ease.
Purpose of today's meeting is to start the discussion on the supplemental budget, so we're going to do the fast track today, Senate Bill 97, and get a start on that. Hopefully we'll be able to have the issues explained at the table in the next 2 hours. And on Wednesday, we'll roll to the regular track, or the slow track, and work through those. Hopefully in this 3.5 or 4 hours, we'll be able to get through both bills and have issues on the table for further discussion after the hearings. Today we won't have public testimony. There are some folks online, and we'll get to those in just a moment. The schedule for today is Shofraska is going to join us to lead off, and then John Katz is with us online from D.C., and so we're going to jump to John and go ahead and take his issue. And then we'll go back to your books as you have them, and we'll just start at the top with the Department of Administration and walk through each of those. We just received this bill last week, and I know some of you have done some work on it, and there's more work to be done. I would ask that we confine our discussion today to the fast track and not get into the slow track. We'll do that on Wednesday. We have online, Mr. Katz is with us from the governor's office in D.C. Barb Brink is with us, along with Josh Fink from the public defender's office. And they would like to testify. And with us to answer questions from the Department of Law is Craig Tillery, and from Health and Social Services, Bill Hogan. They're online. So we welcome you folks. Thanks for joining us this morning. And I think with that, let's roll to Ms. Fraska. Good morning, Cheryl. If you would present Senate Bill 97, and we'll begin.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl Fraska, Office of Management and Budget. And again, we do appreciate your prompt taking up of these two measures and look forward to the discussions that will take place in order to address any concerns you may have. And the comments I'm going to make really are just reflecting the whole supplemental package as opposed to going back and forth between the fast track and the slow track. But in going back 2 months ago when we first rolled out our budget on December 15th, we did have placeholders in our fiscal plan for fiscal year 05 for $85 million in supplemental spending plus another $40 million in governor's initiatives. And the total of those two is $125 million that we had identified as, a placeholder for additional spending out of current year revenues. And we recognize that the proposals that we've submitted to you are nearly $17 million higher than what our placeholders were. And we did have, we did work to try to reduce it, but I think as you go through, there's a story for every dollar that's in the supplemental, and we believe that there's a reasons why the additional funding is necessary at this time. And I also recognize that when we say we're $17 million over, we also have taken advantage of some savings in a couple of the formula-driven programs that offset the increased supplemental spending. So we certainly do recognize that. But we also think it's responsible for us to try to find where savings can be realized and use those savings to pay for additional spending. As you go through the supplemental, I believe you'll find that some of the requests represent the traditional kinds of supplemental spending for unanticipated events, but there's also additional dollars requested for several of the governor's initiatives. $40 million is what I would characterize as not so traditional in requests, and that includes $28 million for additional work on the gas line, which you funded last session. One of the departments finds that they're in the need for the dollar sooner than the rest. That's the Department of Law. But we did request all of the gas line money together in the fast track. We also have a request for $6.5 million in small city energy assistance. Again, that's not so traditional in the sense that it's a supplemental to a current program, but that is a commitment that the governor made last fall to try to provide some dollars to help small cities meet some of the higher costs. The good news of high oil prices, as you appreciate, is what it means to the state's revenues. The downside is that it also increases utility costs throughout the state. And then we also have another $5.5 million requested into Department of Health and Social Services programs that, again, are initiatives that the governor would like to start earlier than waiting till fiscal year 06. And the department certainly will speak to you about those. But then there is about another $97 million that is related to more of the traditional kinds of supplemental requests. The first 2 years we were here, Mother Nature was kind of kind to us, and we didn't have much of a fire season, but I think she made up for it this last year, in that $37 million is being requested for the firefighting costs from last summer. And then another $39 million is related to Medicaid programs. And usually those requests in the past have been tied to caseload growth or increased medical costs. But this year we're coming back to you requesting about $36 million in general funds, and the numbers I'm referring to here are in general funds, as a result of us not being able to realize some of the cost containment measures that the Department of Health and Health and Social Services had aggressively pursued over the last 2 years. And some of them are still in the works, but the fact is we need to continue to deliver services to those eligible for Medicaid as we continue to work on those cost savings. Certainly another $11 million is related to higher energy costs. Again, good news of high oil prices, but bad news if you're running the Marine Highway System, in that nearly $7 million is related to higher fuel costs for the Marine Highways. And another several million is related to DOT's highways and aviation costs. And then finally, about another $6.5 million is related to contractual obligations or legal costs. Arizona prisoner contract increased $2.2 million. The general government union monetary terms are included in here for another $2.6 million, again in general funds. And then about another $1.5 million for legal-related costs and judgment and claims. So the departments are here prepared to talk to you about each of their sections, and we do appreciate your prompt attention to the measures, and I'd be glad to answer any questions at this time or let you proceed to Mr. Katz, who will speak to the ANWR request that we do have.
Thank you, Cheryl. Questions, Ms. Raska, before we go to Mr. Katz? Okay, thank you, Cheryl. Good morning, John. Thanks for joining us from D.C., and I think you'd like to talk to us about line number 33, so if we could turn to that. John, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Morning, sir. If you would, guess the supplemental on line, page 2, line 33.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Katz. I'm Director of State state-federal relations and special counsel to the governor. I suspect that you've been bombarded with information about Anwar and about Arctic Power, so I will make my testimony quite brief and then hopefully respond to your questions. This is the best opportunity that we've had for Anwar legislation since President Clinton vetoed the budget reconciliation bill in 1995. The passage of Anwar authorization is by no means a foregone conclusion. Our primary emphasis is on the budget reconciliation process. This process is cleaner and simpler than the normal legislative process, and it is not subject to a veto in the Senate. However, even this process is perhaps questionable. Two of the last 3 years, the Congress has failed to pass a budget reconciliation bill. Even this year, the passage of a budget resolution is in question for reasons unrelated to Anwar. For example, Social Security reform and tax reform. It is safe to say, however, that the congressional leadership supports inclusion of Anwar in budget reconciliation, and that's a major step forward. But budget reconciliation can be a protracted process and could extend even to the August recess. The second major vehicle for dealing with Anwar is comprehensive energy legislation. The Congress originally came quickly out of the blocks to address a bill in this Congress, but that process has slowed, and Congress will have to deal with many of the same impediments that blocked the passage of energy legislation in the last Congress, including the major issue of MTBE liability, which fortunately doesn't relate to Alaska at all. We strongly support the continuation of Arctic Power. We think that if Arctic Power did not exist, we would have to invent something like it. Arctic Power gives us some flexibility that the government does not provide in public policy advocacy. They are the one entity in the process that's supposed to think about Anwar 24/7. In the last 2 to 3 weeks, Arctic Power has made some major strides forward, in our opinion. They have improved their means of coordinating with the Alaska Congressional Delegation and the governor's office. They've added some very good people to their senior leadership. They've fleshed out the facets of a public policy advocacy campaign with some excellent consultants. Having said this, however, there are still discussions occurring between us and Arctic Power. We do think that some additional changes need to be made, and hopefully will be. We have requested the amount of $500,000 in the supplemental. We are aware that there are bills pending in the legislature that range between $1.1 and $1.3 million. But we think that the most prudent way of addressing funding for Arctic Power is to think of it in two components. The first component would be the budget resolution itself. And if the legislature were to appropriate $500,000, that would be combined with other funds that are currently available to Arctic Power, either because of prior state allocations or private funding. We're trying now to get a precise handle on the availability of those extra funds, but we estimate that they would be around $225 million. We're meeting with Al Adams and Jerry Hood this afternoon to try to refine those numbers. Arctic Power estimates that the initial phase would cost somewhere between $700,000 and $750,000, and the combination of the supplemental plus funds that we think are already available should get us to that point. Then the second phase would become operative. Budget reconciliation itself is a leadership-driven process. It's very intense. When it works well, it's relatively short in duration. But complementing that would be the normal legislative process and the comprehensive energy bill. We think that by the time the legislature adjourns in May, that we will have a much better idea of how ANWR and energy legislation will be treated in the 109th Congress, and also have a better handle on what Arctic Power has done and needs to do. So then we think that it's logical that the second phase would be whatever Arctic Power requires to complete the effort in the aftermath of budget reconciliation. Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there and see if you or other members have any questions.
Thank you, John. Questions of Mr. Katz? Mr. Katz, just in broad terms, what is the timeline for budget reconciliation and the other major steps in regard to weeks or months?
It's very hard, Mr. Chairman, to estimate the length of time for budget reconciliation. If it works proper in its pristine form, we would hope to have a budget resolution on the President's desk for signature in late April or early May. But past history tells us that the budget reconciliation process can extend way beyond then to the August recess or perhaps even beyond. So it's very difficult to predict the timing, and as I mentioned earlier, also there's the unknown question of whether we'll have a budget bill at all this year, although that should clarify by the late April-May timeframe.
Yes, sir. Other questions of Mr. Katz? Okay. John, thanks for joining us this morning and for your help on that issue.
Thank you.
Let's begin then. Let's come back to the table and begin with the fast track. And I think you all have your summary sheets in front of you and the detail in your blue books. I think we'll just start right at the top with administration. They have a single item. Who's here from the administration to help us? Good morning.
Good morning.
And if each of you, when you begin your presentation, if you just refer to the Excel line number, I think that'll keep us close to being on track. If you would, please, line number 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Zach Swanson. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Administration. Line number 7, Section 1 in the Fast Track Bill, is a request for $110,000 of general fund for our non-public building fund facilities for increased fuel and utilities costs in the current fiscal year. The non-public building fund group of facilities managed by the Department of Administration include the Governor's Residence, the third floor of this building, the Diamond Courthouse, the Archives and Record Center here in Juneau, the State Museum and Building Annex, and the Subcourt Building in Juneau. And we have experienced cost increases this past year for utilities. Fuel is a significant portion of that. We also have some more snow work this year than we have had in the past, and that impacted the budget as well. So for those reasons, we're asking for supplemental funding of $110,000.
Thank you, Eric. Questions, Mr. Swanson? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for joining us this morning.
Mr. Chairman, we've actually got a couple of other sections. If you would like me to jump ahead and sure. and go through those.
Thank you.
The next item is for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It's Section 7 of the bill, and
Line number 24 on the spreadsheet. This request, Mr. Chairman, is for $1.2 million of general fund for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission for reservoir studies and depletion plan evaluations related to the state gas pipeline. And I believe that we have AOGCC Commissioner Dan Seaman online if there are any questions about their participation in this project.
Is Mr. Seymour online? Okay. Is it?
Seymour.
And I believe he's
Seymour, are you with us this morning?
Yes, this is Dan Seymour, Mr. Chairman. I'm on the line.
Morning, sir. Did you have any testimony on the item number 24?
We
reservoir studies?
Senior reservoir engineer Jack Hart has sent some information to the Legislative Information Office. I don't know if you have it in front of you, but it describes what our duties are, what it is we're trying to study, why we need to use general fund rather than our regulatory cost charge, and why it should be fast-tracked, and we're prepared to give that presentation, or we can just answer questions if you have any. Basically, what we're talking about is a study to evaluate the effects of major gas sales, taking reservoir energy off of the Prudhoe Bay Reservoir, which could result in hundreds of millions of barrels of oil loss if it is not conducted in the correct manner. There are ways where we could mitigate this loss, and that's what the purpose of the study would be. We feel it should be fast-tracked. We have a hearing coming up on March 3rd. These studies take 3 years. We don't want to be a holdup on this major project that's so important to the state. With that, if you would like Mr. Hart to give the full-blown presentation, we can do it, or we can just answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think Mr. Seymour for today, just the overview is proper. Any questions of Mr. Seymour? Mr. Seymour, if the project begins on March 1st of 05 and ends in 2010, why would it be in the 05 supplemental budget? Why wouldn't it just be part of a normal budgeting process?
If the gas sales were to happen in 2010, that means that the equipment major expenses would have to be made by the operators years before that. If we started now, we're still pushing up. We have to make a decision whether we can approve of their plan or not before they start ordering equipment, and that could be as soon as 3 years from now.
I understand that part, but why wouldn't this be a July 1st of 06 expenditure rather than a 05 expenditure supplemental? What is the hurry to have it in this supplemental budget?
Through the chair, Senator, we have this hearing on March 3rd, and we need to know what our budget is in order to start the planning process on the project.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dean.
Have any costs been incurred to date on this reservoir studies?
We haven't incurred any direct costs yet on this study.
Will the studies be done in-house?
Through the chair, Senator, no, we would contract the studies out to experts in the these type of reservoir evaluations. It's a very specific kind of study.
Well, has the RFP and the delineation of that study been drawn up to a point to date?
No, it has not.
Well, I joined Senator Wilkin in asking why this would not be in the regular 06 budget.
Dan, why is it general, oh, Cheryl's going to join us. Why is it general fund spending? And I guess I'll, Cheryl, do you want to answer that?
Well, I did, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to speak to why did we include it in the supplemental. And what we did is we, as a, to, in order to keep together the costs related to the gas line, we did include all of the costs in the supplemental. Some of them are needed sooner than others, and so there are some that can be put off, and Department of Revenue would be able to speak to theirs and DNR to theirs. I know law is part of the fast track request, so we'd yield to AOGCC regarding the timing, but there is some discretion.
And YGF?
Because the AOGCC is funded out of production taxes, and this is not production-related, and as a result, it was not an appropriate use of that fund source, is the reason.
Okay, thank you.
I'm here to help.
Other questions on AOGCC gas line reservoir studies? Senator Olson.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'd like to know what kind of negative effects are going to happen. This is a question of Ms. Braska. What kind of negative effects are going to happen if we don't allow this $1.2 million to go through? What are the repercussions of this?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I'd have to defer to the AOGCC commissioner to speak to that.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Seamount, did you hear Senator Olson's question?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chairman. The AOGCC does not want to be a bottleneck in this very important project. The sooner we get started on this evaluation to determine what the permitted, what the reasonable gas production rate would be, the better the chance would be that we are not going to hold up this project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We've been joined by Senator Dyson. Morning, sir. Other questions of AOGCC or the administration on reservoir studies? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Seamount, for joining us this morning. Also, Mr. Hartz. And before I let you go, did you mention something about a handout that we would have received?
Yes, this is Jack Hartz. Mr. Chairman, I...
Jack, speak up just a little bit, please.
This is Jack Hartz, Mr. Chairman. I forwarded an email copy of the full presentation material to both Senator Wilkin and Senator Green. Someone on your staff.
When did you do that? I don't see it, so I just...
I did it about 8:30 this morning.
Oh, okay. We weren't to work yet. Okay. We'll get that off of our emails and pass that out to everybody. And it is essentially a presentation on this particular subject. Bert, do you have it there?
Yes, sir.
Let's see what it's...
No, there's a guy on the committee.
Oh, here it is. Oh, we've got it. Oh, okay. All right, we have it. Thank you. Okay, thanks for joining us, man. Before we go to the... Oh, let's see, you had another one.
Mr. Chairman, we have one other item to touch on here. Row number 43 on your spreadsheet, and this has to do with the general government unit contract. As you know, Mr. Chairman, the general government unit did not ratify the contract for FY 2005 until after the legislature had adjourned last year. So the monetary terms for this first fiscal year of the contract are and this is Section 13 of the bill, requesting just over $5.5 million for general fund health insurance cost increases in this current fiscal year.
Questions? Okay.
Did you say health? That's all?
Section 13 is just health insurance for the current fiscal year, for GGO, that's correct.
Thank you.
So $5.56 million is the increase in health care for GGU for this contract. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we're going to have Commerce, and while those folks are coming to the table, I understand on the teleconference network, Ms. Brink and Mr. Fink, you're just there to answer questions. Also, we've been joined by Stephanie Birch and Ann Gore from the Division of Public Health. And Kate Gerard from RCA. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for joining us. Let's see, now we're at Commerce Line number 8, I believe. Morning. If you would, please, who's going to start off?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Joellen Hanrahan, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Commerce. With me is
Al Cloud, Deputy Commissioner for the Department. Thanks for the opportunity to be here this morning, Senator Wilkin, and members of the committee. I think the first item, which is item 8 on the spreadsheet, is the Small Cities Energy Assistance, $6.450 million. The basic history behind that is that was a commitment given by the governor last fall. As Shelf Raska pointed out, the dichotomy of high fuel prices is good for the state, but certainly presenting a challenge for those that need fuel. One of the reasons, of course, of this being in the supplemental is to position the communities to be able to take advantage of delivery times and such for procuring fuel for next year. The spring shipment is a much more beneficial time to move fuel by river, as opposed to waiting until late in the season when the rivers are starting to dry up. This also corresponds quite nicely with the current effort that's underway with the Governor's Rural Energy Council on looking at ways to evolve the energy position for small Alaskan communities. And that's probably enough said right now.
Questions on Small City Energy Assistance Program? Senator Stedman?
I'm kind of curious. In the title, it talks about, you know, energy impact assistance, and then in the last line it says that the cities may use these monies for any public purpose for which the city has authority to spend, so there's no strings attached. So if in fact that's the case, why would the title be so much different from the last line on the...
Senator Stedman, through the chair, I did not write the language, so I couldn't speak directly to it. There are certainly allowing the community's flexibility, especially in some of the cases where there's some in some instances communities have IRS problems and such that it's a pretty tenuous path to route through to see that energy assistance goes through that and doesn't get attached by the IRS. That may be a reason for allowing some latitude in this. I did not draft that language, so I couldn't speak directly to it.
So to follow on to that, if this committee just made it reimbursement for fuel costs, conform with the original intent rather than just a reinstitution of revenue sharing. Would we be able to do that?
I have not an objection to that. I don't know if Cheryl wants to speak to that issue or not.
We can talk about that later. Senator Stedman, other questions on... Did that answer your question?
No. But I think the chair's response, brings the issue back on point. So maybe we can get an explanation later. It just seems like there's some conflicting language here.
I agree. And I think that we need to. If it's for fuel assistance, then let's make it for fuel assistance. And if it's for not, then let's not spend the money. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at the amount of money that we're dealing with here, how many communities have actually taken advantage of this program?
Well, Senator Olson, through the chair, I think the way this is crafted, this is a formula-driven appropriation that would go out to, I think it's
125
communities based on their size. The smaller communities receiving $25,000, the largers receiving, I think, a $75,000 payment. No one has taken advantage of this program as of yet because the funds haven't been appropriated and nor distributed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So the $125 is what amounts to the maximum participation? Is that what you're estimating?
Yes.
And could we get a list of those 125?
Yeah, I believe they're actually in the bill. Details the individual communities.
Okay. So what would be the intent for 07? Are we going to continue to fund fuel for selected communities around the state?
And that's a, Senator Wilkin, that's a, certainly a policy decision, and you know, we're not in a position to speak directly to that and what's the most prudent way. What we're trying to do through the department with the assistance of the administration is to make some systemic changes that lower the cost of delivered fuel to these communities and also improve the overall energy cost, looking at that as being such a throttle to both community and economic enhancement throughout the bush. Right now, I think this is viewed as the ability to kind of prime the pump and make some systemic changes that in the long term will start to support themselves. One obvious thing that we've had success with in this program that will allow us to continue on would be fuel cooperatives, bulk buying, and bulk management of fuel, if you will. And this has certainly been shown to make significant difference on the delivered cost of fuel to the communities, and through those savings allow a program to then essentially support itself. This is kind of a one-time opportunity, as we see it right now, to really get out there and make some positive changes.
Okay. You know, Al, that all the freight that comes through the port of Anchorage up over the highway to the people I represent has been carrying a 10% fuel surcharge for the last year. So the people I represent are paying 10% extra to live in their chosen community. So I'm a little concerned about just taking certain communities and recognizing that fuel has impacted that community and not impacted other communities. I find it arbitrary. I find it a selected grant with really no basis, and I'm not a big fan of this program. And I can answer what I would expect in 07, regardless of what we do in 06. Having said that, I'll just be quiet, but this is probably my least favorite issue in this whole supplemental. I find it very disturbing and very divisive. So, having said that, morning, Senator Bundy.
Good morning.
Let's see, anything else? Why isn't this just an 06 budget item?
Well, Senator Wilkin, I first of all, this came out last fall, as I say, in comments the governor was giving to the overall small communities of the state. And secondly, because if this doesn't come out until the operating budget, we would lose the ability to get these early spring shipments.
Right, in the spring.
And that's that allows us to short-circuit having to run smaller shipments up the rivers in the fall when they're in decline rather than taking advantage of the high water. And this is a type of savings, if we can put this together, which will pass through to all of the river communities.
All right, thank you. Senator Bundy.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just looking at this, there was a comment in here. These cities lack the population or commercial sector to generate revenues to increase local fees or taxes. We had some information some time back about the earned income in the unorganized area. I'm just wondering if you still have that information.
in 04, there was $505 million earned by 18,000 people in unorganized Alaska. $505
million
earned by 18,000 some number in unorganized Alaska.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else on small city energy assistance? Let's see, Senator Green and then Senator Stedman.
Yeah, I just wanted to continue on your question, Mr. Chairman, about 07, because if this is in this supplemental, and I know you said you didn't want to carry it on to the other discussion, but is it rolled in and it becomes a base in 06?
Al, did you hear Senator Green?
I'm sorry, I really couldn't hear your question.
I know if this is a supplemental for right now, but is this rolled into the 06 budget for a repeat of this for the next year? And I see Cheryl Fraska shaking her head. No. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Just a procedural question, because this is the first supplemental budget I've had an opportunity to look at. But when we find an item like this where, you know, there's a disagreement on potential uses, we can line item the use for fuel, can we not? And direct this money so it's in the intent, so it does not end up going into just the general fund to be spent how they see fit. Is that correct?
I was going to ask the administration if they would come back with the procedure by which we would restrict this to fuel purchases only.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly, as we look at some of the high price of fuel, and since I represent a large portion of small communities are out there that are desperate for some of these funds, and we certainly want to be good stewards of what we're using it for. Has the department done a study to go ahead and see what would happen if we were funded and what it's going to cost the state if for some reason there is a situation where there is inadequate fuel that's out there and places start freezing up and we're going to have to start essentially flying the fuel in?
Senator Olson, through the chair, the short answer is no, we have not done a study, though we have certainly discussed that issue frequently and also with our counterparts in other state agencies. And the basic premise is certainly if small communities do not have adequate fuel and public facilities are at risk, and the end result, as has happened for various reasons, is not good. We look at that issue. Getting the data to really quantify it has been a real challenge. A lot of the information is anecdotal, though it is certainly a concern of the department, and this is, of course, one of the reasons from the department's perspective we think this is a good piece of work to try to, again, those problems and make some systemic changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, anything else on small city energy assistance? We'll refine those questions and get those to you. I don't see any need to discuss item number 9. Item number 10?
Item number 10 is the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. This is an increase, and Kate Guyard is online to speak to any questions related to this. This is a supplemental to for a couple of reasons. One is $190,000 was inadvertently left off of the FY06 budget, and that is to pay legal costs. That occurred because there was a split between the RCA components in last year's budget and this piece that inadvertently got left off of the department's budget. This also is money to pay for the TAPS appeals on RCA orders, and also to implement a initiative that Kate Guyard could speak to.
Before we go to Kate, why can't this just be an 06 item?
Well, partly the items that are being, the $190,000 was left off for an FY05.
Okay.
And also the improvement initiative is occurring now with beginning to look at the business processes. And again, I think that Kate could probably explain to you why she wants to be doing that at this time.
Okay. Kate, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Any brief testimony on item number 10?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. We are looking at the Regulatory Commission of Alaska beginning July 1, 2004, when I was elected chairman. We went out and did an unprecedented discussion with utility boards of directors, agencies, pipeline CEOs, and we are trying to address the issues that seem to come before the legislature every time the commission is up for sunset. We are looking at another sunset provision coming forward in 2007, which gives us approximately 2 years to really reevaluate the ongoing operations of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and to identify and fix, a permanent fix, those items that you hear about on a fairly consistent basis. And I have categorized those as timeliness, accountability, lowering the cost of doing business for utilities, granting the public and utilities seamless access to our processes and our procedures, and fairness and equitable rates. So this initiative that we started on July 1, 2004 has got a significant momentum, and we're projecting out to be well and complete in 2007. In 2005, starting now, we are going to go through an intensive evaluation of our business processes and clean up our internal processes so we can get our orders out much more timely, we can get our decisions, and we can lift the curtain that seems to be between our decision-making process and the public at large.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Guyard? Okay. Thank you, Kate, for joining us this morning. Anything else on RCA? Okay. If we could go to item 11. Actually, I don't think we need to talk about item 11. That's self-explanatory. Item 12?
That's not us.
That's not us.
We'll defer to Department of Corrections for that.
That's right. Anything else in here for Commerce? Okay. Thanks, folks, for joining
us. Thank you very
much. Morning, ladies. Who's going to start off?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Portia Parker with the Department of Corrections. The first item is a $50,000 request for correction officer and probation officer recruitment. This is to fund an advertising, or to supplement our advertising for new officers. The department currently has a very difficult time recruiting new officers, both probation and correctional officers. And this will all go towards an advertising campaign, which is the first time the department has ever engaged in an advertising campaign for officers.
Okay. Questions on item number 12? Push of the, excuse me, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Portia, it's always, I've understood that it's one of the most attractive contracts that any employee group has with the state, and with the week on, week off schedule and so on, that it's very attractive. What's the problem?
Through the Chairman, Senator Dyson, we have a difficulty with not only people knowing about corrections as a career, that is part that we're hoping that the advertising will help with, that is not always something that people think of, is becoming a correctional officer or probation officer. People are unaware of the career opportunities, and which is a little different than some of the other law enforcement, where people are aware of police officers or troopers, but are unaware of the career opportunities in corrections. And even though we have stepped up efforts internally, participating in career fairs, job fairs, working with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and at the universities, we are still having a difficult time with recruitment. And I'm not exactly sure why. There are a variety of reasons that's happening, but we consistently are having difficulty with enough applicants applying that meet the qualifications.
What's the corrections officer who, say, 5 years on the job, annual salary? round numbers?
I believe with benefits, we're probably looking around $70,000. 70 to 75. I can double check that for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Portia, but it appears that it might be a substantial lapse money from one year to the next. And I'm wondering if you have to talk about it now, but if you'd look to see if you could take that $50,000 out of the lapse money.
Current year projections do not indicate that there will be large lapses this year, certainly not in RDUs that this would apply to. A large amount of money has gone this year towards paying overtime for vacant positions as well as various types of leave, workers' compensation, FEMLA, and that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. If you identify yourself for the record, please.
Charlene Griffin, Acting Director of Admin Services.
Okay, thanks. Okay, anything else on recruiting efforts? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at some of the advertising for the recruitment that's going on out there, obviously it's going on, I'm assuming, nationally. How much emphasis is being put on local hire for some of the correctional facilities that are out, especially in rural Alaska? I know that there's a correctional facility out there in Nome, but I'm not sure that there is necessarily a lot of local people being hired there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, in Nome last year, we started the superintendent initiated this and working with the Human Resources Public Protection Group, did a strong local effort both with public service announcements, flyers, and direct mail and postcards, open house at the institution during the Iditarod time. And we actually hired the largest number of local, since it opened, 7 local hires for COs in Nome last year. We're continuing that effort this year, and we're also hoping to replicate that same type of a program in Bethel, in the Bethel area, although we do have about 85% local hire in Bethel. And that will be enhanced by some of this advertising, which will be targeted at rural Alaska.
Anything else on recruitment?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Item 13, e-commerce.
Item 13, $225,000 in administrative services for an e-commerce system. The Department of Corrections based its FY05 budget on implementing a spend management e-procurement type system. That has not gotten off the ground. The reductions were taken for savings from a system of that nature. We're currently exploring options. We have an RFP on the street. We're looking at the possibility of a spend management program or something along the lines of the procurement pilot project and something related to that. Estimates of developing a catalog and implementing a system for the Department of Corrections are $225,000. We hope to, this is in the fast track, because we hope to get this off the ground so that we can achieve the anticipated savings for FY06.
And why wouldn't you just wait for the e-commerce pilot program to show itself and put that in place rather than go out and do your own?
We are looking into both options, and it may be that we end up waiting for that. However, because we built our FY05 budget based on the assumption that we would be part of some type of e-procurement system, we don't have the funds available to pay whichever vendor or whichever system comes into play.
Okay. I don't understand that, but we'll circle back and work on that later. Any other questions on e-commerce? Item 14.
Mr. Chairman, this is the increase for the out-of-state contract. Last year, we went out with an RFP, and we were still in the middle of the RFP process and negotiations at the end of the fiscal year. And this is the supplemental to cover that increase in cost from November 1, 2004 through June 30th, 2005. It went from $53.99 under the previous contract to $57.15 under the new negotiated contract.
Questions on out-of-state beds? Okay. Seeing none, item 15.
Item 15 is a request for $65,000 for the parole board. The board was cut $75,000 in the travel line in the FY05 budget with the assumption that many hearings could be done via teleconferences or video conferencing. That has not, we've not been able to achieve savings from that. Many times what we're finding is that it's not possible through those systems to bring on all of the people that need or want to attend those hearings. There are attorneys, there's victims, there's the board, there's families of the offender, and so on, and we just don't have the capacity to do that. This supplemental is required for the parole board to continue operations through the end of the fiscal year. Without this funding, hearings will not be heard, and there is a potential of approximately 20 additional prisoners being held in custody that otherwise would be released on discretionary parole. Without the supplemental, there is the possibility of upwards of $195,000 additional expense for the department.
Okay. Questions? Senator Green?
Yeah. With the parole board, are there timelines under which paroles must be heard after a request is made, and does it, is it impacted when you're kind of operating on a short budget?
Through the chair, Senator Green, yes, there are timelines, and yes, it is impacted. On mandatory parole, the board must see an offender within 120 days from being remanded. There's approximately 425 mandatory hearings annually. In addition to that, there's another 175 discretionary hearings annually.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Other questions on the parole board? I don't see a need to go over 16. Let me walk you back up, if I could, to e-commerce.
Okay.
Has any of that 225 been spent as yet?
No.
Okay. Okay. Anything else from the Department of Corrections? Okay, thank you, ladies, for joining us. Let's go to education. Morning, Eddie. Morning, Karen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Education, and with me is Eddie Jeans, our Director of School Finance. Starting on line 17 of your spreadsheet, we have three items before you in the Fast Track Supplemental. The first has to do with a lawsuit, and it should be noted on your schedule, it's Moore v. State, not Noon v. State. That's my error, and I'm sorry. It's Moore v. State. And that lawsuit was filed last fall, challenging the state's public school funding formula. We have retained a national firm of experts to help our attorneys in preparation for this case. We have a $230,000 general fund request before you with an extended lapse date. We do expect that preparation to take some time. We do have the contract, and we would like to ask for the extended lapse date into 06 as well.
And is there any, in the 06 budget, any expectation, or will the 230 get you through 06?
Mr. Chairman, we will be talking with you about a governor's budget amendment to 06 for some additional costs for that.
Questions on the public school lawsuit? Senator Stedman?
It looks like you're projecting a possibly a total cost of about $800,000 if you prevail in this litigation. Is that?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, for the record, Eddie Jeans, school finance manager. That's our preliminary estimate right now, is $800,000 for the total cost of the state's case. As we move forward, it may go up, may come down. We don't know yet.
And this lawsuit is the disability lawsuit, not to be confused with the adequacy lawsuit.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, the Moore v. State was the disability lawsuit,
yes.
And that's Moore v. State is the one that we're talking about. It was my mistake on your spreadsheet.
Is number 17 new or more?
More.
More.
Oh. Well,
agree? Right. Okay. Our backup says noon, so okay. So this is the adequacy study?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Senator
Green?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and this is all just regular general fund, the 230 up to 800,000?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, it would be general fund.
Yeah, that's a sizable amount that could have gone toward increasing the formula.
Student loan, yes, that's correct, it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Okay, anything else on adequacy study lawsuit? Okay. Next, line 18.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is a request for $800,000 in general funds related to our Mount Edgecombe expansion project. As you know, we are serving an additional 30 students this school year. These costs are associated with the residential program, including food services, dormitory services, janitorial, and supplies. We do have a corresponding increase in the 06 budget that will accommodate an additional 30 for a total increase in student population at Mount Edgecombe of 60 students.
Okay. Senator Green?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, is this the same 800 or a million we talked about last year when we were going through the budget process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, yes it is. We brought this forward last spring and had a conversation with the committee. It did not end up getting your approval last year. We're back before you again asking for that.
Has anything happened that would make you think our minds have changed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, I don't know if your minds have been changed, but I do know that we are serving the additional students and do have the additional costs this year.
And it's planned to increase again next year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, yes, the legislature did approve our capital project last year, so we are adding an addition to the classroom building there, and we have renovated an older building for a 60-bed dorm. That approval was received last fall. I think the discussion was whether or not we should have proceeded to serve an additional 30 students in the current year. We're utilizing the third floor of the City Pioneers Hall, which has been vacant. That particular arrangement has worked out very well. The students are doing well over there. Actually, this fall, we've had our best retention rate ever at Mount Edgecombe. We had only lost 9 students by Christmas time. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of very positive things happening at Mount Edgecombe right now. So the discussion at the table, I think, is about the timing, but we do have the additional costs this year.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I find this, and I have nothing against Mount Edgecombe, but I can't imagine why I would be inclined to do an extra $800 million and another like amount next year when not one of my high schools is getting an extra $800,000 boost in its budget, nor are yours. And I would assume that in the calculation for the running or the operation of the Mount Edgecombe School, it is the money that goes in through the student count would be part of what is supposed to support that program. I was very disappointed to see this in this document, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I think what we need is probably a timeline of decisions made over the last 18 months. That would help me to understand kind of why we're where we are, because I was surprised too to see this. So we'll work through that so we understand how we got to where we are today. Senator Seven.
I assume that the population increase in Edgecombe, Mount Edgecombe High School is because of performance of the school in teaching the students. I assume that these students came from some other school. So wouldn't there be a reduction in some other direction also?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, the students do come from about 110 different communities across the state, mostly rural Alaska. They are served at Mount Edgecombe, and they are counted in the public school funding program, and that instructional piece is funded through the public school funding program. What isn't covered in that instructional component is the cost of the residential program at Mount Edgecombe. That's the 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week services for those students. So this is the piece, the general fund that we are requesting before you is for the residential component, not the instructional component.
Okay. That's a good question. Senator Olson, follow-up, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, I guess we can go into it further when we get the timeline layout and do a, you know, take a look at the cost and also the potential offsets from the ongoing education, not so much the housing. I do support this, by the way.
No.
Surprise.
Senator Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to speak in support of this as well. One of the questions I do have is that if these new 30 students that are there, and this is light item belt for a reason, what's going to happen to those 30 students?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, at this point, what would happen absent a supplemental is basically our personal services would not get paid. We would be running our personal services budget for the residential and the teaching staff there because we've had to take money out of those lines to cover these increased contractual costs in the current year. The students would be served and continue to be served. We would be in the red. We would not be able to cover our personal services costs.
If I can continue, Mr. Chairman, so a year from now, would we see a decrease in 30 students if for some reason this was not funded this year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, if the legislature chooses not to fund this, then for should choose to not fund the additional funding for the operating costs in 06, even though you've already appropriated the funds for the capital expansion, we would probably need to reevaluate what we're trying to do at Mount Edgecombe if we don't get the support of the legislature to serve the additional students.
Mr. Chairman, I just make one last comment. Since I am a product of the boarding school program, I think that when you have a boarding school program, you have the increased challenge of having more students there to go ahead and make it so that they can have the ability to survive in college, especially when you come from rural schools. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Olson. And is the rumor true that using the third floor of the Pioneer Home for the students at Mount Edgecombe has resulted in a rash of prune fights?
Okay.
Item 19. I doubt there'd be any prune fights.
I'll check that out.
No, Senator Stedman, we're going to move on.
Comment, Ryan. When you come back and we talk about these offsets, you can include the impact on the Pioneers Home, because clearly when there's some added revenue in the Pioneers Home, it puts downward pressure on their revenue needs from elsewhere with the use of the third floor.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, we actually have, I think, a very good relationship with the Pioneers Home, and at this point, the utilities are, and some of the build-out and the work that we needed to do to get that ready for the students has worked really nicely there for us. The residents are very happy with the arrangement, and so are the students. It's worked very nicely.
Okay, we'll circle back on 18. Anything else from the committee on that? Okay, we'll do some more work on that. Okay, 19?
19. Mr. Chairman, this is a request for $100,000 in general funds to support the personal services costs at the Alaska State Museums. There's a couple of things contributing to this. One that sounds a little unusual is that we had a decline in program receipts last summer. And program receipts does support a great deal of the personal services costs there. We think that a lot of it was contributed to the fact that we had a beautiful summer in Southeast Alaska. The sun shone almost every day, which I have lived here my entire life, and that doesn't happen very often. It did impact the visitors coming to the museum. That is about $48,000 of the $100,000 request before you, that decline in program receipts. There's two other pieces that affect the museum's budget.
One is their internal chargeback, and we've had a lot of discussion about that, what all of our programs have been faced with in the last couple of years with our size of our department getting smaller and smaller and the lack of general fund to cover some of the costs for the state board, the commissioner, our internal administrative services, and IT support. So the museum ended up paying for more of that. Plus, in the budget, we always budget our maximum vacancy for the size of component, and that usually that's about a $30,000 problem. So all those contributed to the fact that we are very short in personal services this year. Our options at the museum are very limited. Really, all we can do to cover those costs would be to close the museum for some amount of time. That then further impacts our program receipts. So it's just kind of a spiraling issue. We believe, given the support that we have from the governor in the 06 budget and the increases that he has included for the museum and the library are going to help us in the 06 budget, but at this particular time in 05, we wouldn't be before you if we had some other options.
Senator Green?
When you're talking about internal chargebacks, are you talking about like from admin to the Department of Education, or are you talking about within the Department of Education, early development?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, for the most part, it's our own internal chargeback. Mm-hmm. There are other costs that we have to pay to the Department of Administration as well. But the biggest chunk that's affecting the museum this year is internally, because right now we don't have any general fund in our executive administration and very little in our administrative services. We have, in the last several years, reduced 11 positions out of our central admin services, IT, and commissioner's office. And we are a very lean organization, but we just couldn't cover our own costs. So we had to charge each one of our operating divisions, including the museum, to cover those costs. That cut into what they would have had to move up and cover their personal services shortfall. So it's a combination of all of those pieces and the decline in the program receipts that we did not expect that's contributed to this whole dilemma in the current year. But we do think in 06, with your support and with the governor's support, that budget will be in good shape.
As the department has gotten less broad with child care and other issues going to the Department of Labor and Health and Social Services, the indirect costs are being spread across those components that remain. So we asked last year if we would start the movement away from burdening those other components with this administrative costs. And in the 06 budget, we're starting to see that, move away from that. The question of whether the administrative costs are appropriate or not is a different discussion, but we'll walk through that when we do the budget. But I appreciate, for one, the attempt to move away from those indirect costs being spread across, for instance, libraries and museums, which have a tough time covering them. Senator Stedman?
Brief question. Did you find that the drop in visitors to the museums was spread wider than just Juneau? Did Sitka have the same impact with the old Sheldon Jackson Museum?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I don't have the breakdown between the two museums. My guess is because there's usually a larger visitor population in Juneau in the summer, the bigger impact was here, but it was as nice in Sitka as it was here, so I suspect that they did see a direct decline as well.
Anything else on that issue?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
it's gratifying to know, in spite of the criticisms we get of tourism, tourists, they have enough sense to come in on their own.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, anything else in Department of Education?
Mr. Chairman, we just have a very small piece under that section 13 that talks about the GGU health insurance costs, but that's lined out in the bills.
Okay. Okay, thanks for joining us this morning. We've been joined on the line by Sean Parnell, morning senator. Nice to have you with us. He's here to answer questions for DNR. Let's go to DEC. They have a couple of items. Who's with us from DEC this morning? Morning, ma'am.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Krista Ryan. I'm the Director of Environmental Health for the Department of Environmental Conservation. This morning, I'll be addressing Line 21 and Line 20. Their requests of $355,000 general fund and a reappropriation of $500,000. These funds are needed to complete the construction of our environmental health laboratory. It's due to open this fall, so that is why it is in the fast track supplemental. The costs were in addition to our original request because of changes we had to make to the design of the facility to respond to bioterrorism, and events we weren't aware of when we designed the initial building. And I'll just briefly explain what those were. One, our state veterinarian did not realize he would potentially need to be autopsying animals that had contagious diseases like avian flu or West Nile virus or BSE, and so we needed to move his, they called a necropsy table, into the BSL suite, which is a biosafety level 3, which means that it has a negative air pressure system so that any pathogens in there don't get out into the area surrounding the laboratory. The second change we made is we moved the shipping and receiving from the front of the laboratory in the administrative section back to the back of the building where we would have a safety hood in case agents came into the facility that were dangerous. And again, it was to protect staff, customers, and the community from exposure to some agents that we would not be aware of. And that's basically the main reasons why we made the changes.
Questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at some of these increases in the laboratory situation, and certainly as you start talking about some of the contagions that are out there, for example, West Nile virus, what has happened in the past when you had the necropsy and you had these type of animals?
Mr. Chairman, the samples were previously sent directly to the virology lab in Fairbanks because they had the capacity to take them a little better than we could. But now with the capacity in Anchorage to do it, we could process those samples more quickly.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, it's my understanding that there is going to be a new lab that's going to be up in Fairbanks. Is there going to be a redundancy of virology technical people as or people that are studying that for that matter, not just technical people, mm-hmm. but in the lab facilities as well?
Senator Olson, through the chair, there may be some redundancy in the system, which is good in case you have an emergency outbreak and you need extra people to do things. But what our intentions are is that, for example, if a crow dies in Anchorage, it would come to the Anchorage facility, the environmental health lab, and our state veterinarian would take a sample of it. But the virology test would be confirmed in the Fairbanks lab. That is their specialty, is virology, not ours. But what would be the value of that is if it came back negative from the virology lab, we would then have a sample to outrule something else, for example, salmonella and the red poles that's happening in Fairbanks right now. So there's other things that we want to identify rather than just viruses, and so that's how we could work together to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sandy, just a moment.